This podcast is supported by Washington.org. Washington, D.C. offers visitors so much to explore. Just ask Dayo, who shared her experiences from a recent visit.
What was your favorite food all weekend?
The Ethiopian food at Sihei.
And the first place you would visit again?
The bookstore, Little District Books.
What did you appreciate the most?
Really just like the genuine kindness of everyone that I encountered this weekend.
Why should people visit D.C.?
Well, D.C. is a place with such a thriving culture.
Washington, D.C. has something for everybody. Plan your next trip at Washington.org.
Welcome to the New York Times podcast, your dark black balloon pants of music, news, and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica.
Weight of the world on your shoulders. I guess you're wasting these on mine. I must be favored to know, yeah. I take my hands and praise
you. Coming in, you're listening to, is it the biggest pop star in America or the world? It's tough to know sometimes where boundaries should be set or are being set. That was Seven by Jungkook and Lotto. This is a song that's off technically the first solo Jungkook album, which is Golden, which came out not that long ago. Jungkook, as I'm sure you know, is a member of BTS, which is on hiatus, the biggest K-pop act of recent times. We've talked about K-pop from time to time on podcast, but something interesting has been happening. I've noticed over the last couple of years, but especially real recently, and this is this kind of ongoing wrestling between K-pop industry and I would say American / English language approval, embrace, and dare I say compromise. This is going to be a conversation that we have this week, touching on this most recent album, but also much broader conversation about what's been going on in the K-pop industry. For the first time on Popcast, we have Kara. Kara's from Idolcast blog and podcast. Kara, first of all, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Happy to have you here. Also, no last name because the stans are crazy. And anybody who listens to Popcast knows about the ongoing struggles between people who try to think critically about pop music in a variety of fields and people who tweet. So that is something that I'm sure, given the nature of your writing and the nature of the work that you've been doing in this space, you've encountered a bit over the years.
Just a little bit. I've not as bad as other people who have had attempts to kick them out of their universities or called their works, but I'd really just not like to take any chances.
Okay, so totally great. Also, someone with you in the room today. Sorry. You want to tell us who's
I've
there with
my
you?
My unofficial third mic here, my cat Chewy.
If you're harming Kara, you're harming Chewy, as I think. That's, you should have a photo. It's like when you say something mean about me, this is who you're hurting, and then it's the cat. Something to think about. Okay, let's start big picture. We'll dive in on late period BTS and all these solo albums, but let's start big picture. If we can go back to what feels like something that was like 100 eons ago, which is Big Bang 21, like that era of K-pop groups really starting to make inroads in America. My memory and my recollection going to those shows, listening to those albums, is these are musicians, producers, songwriters who were, to my mind, making an incredible maximalist version of pop music as pop had been constructed in America and Europe, taking it, amplifying it, piecing together in unexpected juxtapositions. And that, to me, when I think of K-pop as a stylistic expression, not simply an expression of a geographical border, when I think of it as stylistic expression, that's where I start thinking about it. And I think of that sound as building upon some foundations of American music, whether it's hip-hop, R&B, pop, European pop, Max Martin pop, etc., building on that, but also innovating past that, but not making any concessions, frankly, to what was happening in terms of trying to get reverse attention in the American marketplace and elsewhere. That's how it felt to me. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that time period as those groups and the groups around them were building up, and how the dialogues were started with the American marketplace in that era.
So back in starting with a little bit before that with Rain. I don't know if you remember, Rain appeared on the Colbert Report and you had the Wonder Girls coming through. Korea is a very small country, very small. And they had already spread at this point in the mid-2000s to Japan, which is a massive music market right next door. And so the next step really was this attempt to crack the American market. And they did it in a variety of different ways. So the JYP groups, which is the Wonder Girls, Rain, it feels almost like they took on, tried to make something American sounding, but it didn't really connect, I think. But these other groups, Big Bang and 21, they did moderate what they were doing a little bit, but it wasn't an attempt to appeal to America or to the West. It's more just an attempt to go big, to go global, to surpass the Korean borders and just be the biggest group on earth. There are definitely some concessions. There is some use of English in a lot of these songs, or nonsense words is another one.
Post-language,
yeah. I mean, ring ding dong is ring ding dong no matter what language you speak. You know, you don't need to speak Korean to understand ring ding dong.
And also, is this roughly around the time, I can't remember if it was before or after, when like Girls' Generation signed to Interscope in America? I remember at some point there was like the first K-pop act signed directly to an American label.
Yeah, that would have been around the same time, kind of 2010-ish. I don't know the exact date off the top of my head. But I think with this first wave of groups that really hit it with like the American, at least the online world, is that it wasn't necessarily that they were going after the big mainstream of America. Because, you know, at this time, 2010, 2011, the competition was just massive. I mean, you were going up against Single Ladies and Lady Gaga. You could live in a yurt at the top of a mountain and still hear Single Ladies blasted at you at that time. And so, yeah, there's no way that a group from Korea could compete with that. And so I think what ended up happening was the beginning of a growth of a dedicated K-pop market in the U.S. You start to see things like KCON starts up around this time. SM Entertainment had their own SM Town around this time. And you do see groups tour on their own, but there's also this real attempt at starting to build this brand K-pop that really starts around that time, but actually I think Gangnam Style really took it to the roof. It was very visual heavy, a lot of dances. You would get you'd start to see the people doing like the K-pop Anywhere dances and putting them up on YouTube, and you get the fan participation as well. It's a whole bunch of things. It's not just making songs and hoping somebody hears them. It was a real dedicated effort to build a K-pop.
Cultivate.
Yeah, a community, a real dedicated audience here in the U.S. that was looking specifically for K-pop, for the specific type of combination of music, of visuals, of dancing, and then all the culture that went around it.
It's interesting to think about the rise of K-pop in that moment. You're right. Katy Perry, Lady Gaga, Beyonce's pop era, Rihanna's pop, like truly pop era, and being in competition with that. But there is something that happens, I think, certently by the mid-2010s, where a lot of those artists are subsiding. And certainly we're past the peak boy band era and Justin Timberlake era, and even past the peak Justin Bieber era, more or less. And there is this kind of vacuum that's existing at that time, at least in the American marketplace, of if you really just want to hear pop music as genre defined, not popular, but pop music. Perversely, by like the mid-2010s, there's just not as much of it around. And having been to those early K-Con, went to the first couple K-Cons in New Jersey and the first Big Bang tour and the first 21 tour. And I remember being struck, to your point, about the community that was being cultivated. Obviously very, very young, very diverse. And it really, I remember being at those shows and thinking, this is what the future, forget the puts on stage. This audience is actually what the future of pop music consumption in this country looks like. And obviously, Taylor Swift people, great. Taylor Swift, Taylor gonna Taylor, not taking anything away from Taylor. But I remember looking at those audiences and thinking, this is what's gonna make a star of 5 to 10 to 15 years from now. this range of people with this level of dedication. And I, to your point, dance is being disseminated being via YouTube and then later Instagram, then later TikTok and so on and so forth. So that's how you build the marketplace. But the songs, I feel like, have to move in that direction a little bit as well. Like, what's in your mind? Is there a song from that era, whether it's solo or group, from those little set of groups, the YG groups, that is emblematic of a song that kind of nodded to an American sensibility, even as it held tight to the kind of framework of what was working in K-pop?
Well, the first one that comes to mind is Big Bang's Bad Boy, with the video shot on the street in, was that Brooklyn? I'm not a New Yorker.
I think it's Brooklyn.
Yeah, with the diverse models that are with them. And just, it was so cool. Like, it was just so effortlessly cool. And I remember seeing that video pop up on maybe Gawker or Jezebel. It was the kind of thing that could appeal to a normal music listener, a very online normal music listener.
Who was not steeped in K-pop lore.
Yes, they weren't in the lore. It was just, it looked cool. It sounded cool. K-pop in Korea, in Japan, is part of something called idol culture. And idol culture can be very, I don't know, what do the kids say? They can be very extra, very over the top. It has a certain aesthetic that may not appeal to those of us in America without the cultural grounding for it. I mean, you can just look up videos by a group like AKB48. It's a very specific look. And the boy groups also have, they can have a very specific look that's just not appealing to an American palate. But something like Bad Boy, it really, they look cool. The diverse women that were in the video, it was set in Brooklyn, and it just sounded like a good pop song.
Let's listen to a little bit of Bad Boy by Big Bang.
Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece. And in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
I'm David Marchese.
And I'm Lulu Garcia-Navarro.
And we're the hosts of The Interview from The New York Times.
David and I have spent our careers interviewing some of the most interesting and influential people in the world.
Which means we know when to ask tough questions and when to just sit back and listen.
And now we've teamed up to have these conversations every week. We'll try to reveal something about the people shaping our world.
And we'll get some great stories from them, too.
It's The Interview from The New York Times. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
The other thing that I was always struck by about those two groups in particular, and then the solo, you know, particularly G-Dragon solo and sort of CL solo, but like you start to see those artists in dialogue implicitly or otherwise with the other pop acts of their moment from other countries. They are going to fashion runway shows that like others, they are being brought in to what I think of as the celebrity gauntlet that a normal American pop star gets put through, but they're being brought in and saying, you go through that as well. And you're on equal standing in essence. And often I remember just even being at a few kind of random fashion shows in like probably the late 2010s. And there'd be K-pop stars who were to me, not A-level stars, but they would show up and the amount of attention afforded them was like hugely disproportionate. And that was really striking to me. I'm used to seeing people swoon over celebrities. That's part of my job at this point. But it was very blown away by that. Can you talk a little bit about the ways in which these extra musical factors helped bring these musicians into a broader American and Western consciousness.
That's also a big part of the just the general Hallyu wave as well. But yeah, fashion is huge with G-Dragon especially. And then Top from Big Bang also has a lot of connections in the art world and the fine arts world. He's very respected. The goal, I think, as a K-pop idol, as a K-pop star, is to break out of the screen, break out of the TV. But you can't dance in high heels forever. So the goal is always to, you know, like Jessica Jung from Girls' Generation, also very involved in fashion. Acting is a big one. And Parasite just won the Oscar. So, I mean, that the whole acting world is also another way to get these stars exposure, get them on the movie screen, get them on your TV screen. So somebody like Taesyeon from 2PM, he was in a Netflix drama. These are other avenues that intersect with other forms of celebrity. Now, within the last few years, there's also been like the political realm. You have BTS going to the UN. 17 was just at the UN. And so, yeah, like these K-pop stars have become just understood as magnets of attention, especially online.
And real vectors for any number of causes or promotional opportunities, anything across the spectrum.
Yeah. And so it's, if you're going to have a new exhibit at the Met, you can get a K-pop star in. Just call up the embassy, get a K-pop star in to talk about it. And you'll get attention. You'll get the clicks. You'll get the media attention.
So given all that, given that up through the mid-2010s, at least, I would think, maybe even the late 2010s, the footprint of K-pop artists globally was growing, but the music still didn't, at least to my ears, didn't feel like overly concessionary to American pop tastes or European pop tastes. And one of the things, again, that I deeply admired about it was, I think sometimes people look at the idiosyncrasies as irregularities to be like sandpapered down. But to me, so many of the idiosyncrasies ended up becoming central musical tenets of the scene. And I remember thinking, okay, you could succeed with these things that feel idiosyncratic through an American perspective and then actually send that back over here and say, actually, no, this is the right way to do pop. Like, not the way you've been doing it. This is the right way. And I thought that held huge promise for the future of global pop. I was really excited about that. It's interesting now to talk about BTS and the evolution and expansion of BTS, and also like the second or third phase of BTS, because I do think there hit a moment when BTS said, or the people pulling the strings on BTS said, in essence, you're an English language group now, or we're going to make these songs that are leading with English, presumably to get a tremendous amount of attention and open up a lot of opportunity in America and elsewhere. But is that what makes BTS great when BTS was great? That's been a bit of a head scratch for me. And I wonder how you perceive, because BTS, I think, is the first group of that scale to have to reckon with this in real time. Those other groups are talking about, they went to military service, they're doing solo work. They predated the real pressure points. BTS is living through the pressure points.
Well, BTS is an interesting case study, I think, because their whole career, BTS from the very beginning, they're kind of a chameleon group. They started off kind of in the mold of Block B and followed these different styles of K-pop. They did the VIX thing where they were doing all these different concepts. And eventually they landed on, you know, Mic Drop, which kind of a Jock Jamsy song. And then, you know, it's at that point, I guess, 2017, 2018, where they morphed or started morphing into a group aimed more at an American boy band audience rather than a band aimed at the American K-pop audience. And I think the way that they were received in America was as a boy band. I think of it as their One Direction era, because they're using some of these same songwriters. You know, it's the Jonas Brothers. It's that era of boy band.
Do you feel like, is Mike Drop the song where you think the pivot hits? Is it Fake Love the song where the pivot hits? Like, whereabouts there? Where did you take notice and say, ah, okay, they pivoted?
For me, I think it was Mike Drop, because they got on Steve Aoki. Just to my ears, I didn't really understand why they had this big touted collab with a guy I'd never heard of before. I don't follow EDM. So
it's also not that big. No shots at Steve Aoki. It's not that big of a get. Like, of all the gets that they've gotten, it's not that big of a get. Wait, should we listen to a little bit of Mic Drop? I think it'd be good just to hear, like, the... Let's listen to Mic Drop, Steve Aoki remix, and Designer is on this remix. To your point, I also took note of this at the time, even though I don't think this is a particularly great job of coming over into this space. It's a little bit arbitrary.
And it's a little bit awkward, too. The song's a little awkward, and it's still in that awkward BTS era. Like, they still have some nods to, like, the K-pop of it all with the very intricate choreography, where if you've ever seen any of the stages, they have members running in and out and doing all these different things, and they're very stylized in their costuming. But it definitely did have that sense of, yeah, we're going to get some names that Americans will know. And it wasn't like going back to Big Bang, where you had G-Dragon with Missy Elliott, or you had Diplo actually reaching out to work with GD and T.O.P. And that's just had a very different feel to it.
I once spent a night in a studio with Diplo and CL for a story that never came out.
Oh my God.
So really wild, really strange night. We then went, we were in the studio, then we went to an Usher concert. I can't remember. Then we like went back to the studio. It was a very let story. It's one for the memoirs. So that's it. It didn't come out. Shout out CL. Shout out Diplo. The great night. So yes, I agree. There's an awkwardness to it. It's also, I think, and this is 2018, I think, or 17. Yeah. I think there's still some like uncertainty amongst American musicians and like, what is this? Like, can I get on these records? Like, does it make sense for me to, in the same way that like Despacito, Justin Bieber getting on Despacito didn't seem obvious until it seemed like the most obvious thing in the world. I think that was still a moment before everybody understood, oh, we can collaborate with anyone. That's actually a positive. This was still like a very tentative moment in outreach in both directions, I think.
And there was still, I think, just a confusion over what K-pop was, because all of that stuff that had happened around Gangnam Style, I think for most normal music listeners or just normal pop culture consumers, that kind of idea of like the bright colors, it's hilarious, there's a lot happening on screen, that is K-pop, just this weirdness on my phone. And then to be faced with these guys making a song that all of a sudden, who are all these girls screaming in the audience of like the Billboard Music Awards? Like, where did these girls come from? And it's like kind of reckoning, like, oh, this is K-pop? These guys dancing on stage? Oh, they're a boy band. And one of the things that you've seen over the last few years, it's actually been kind of touching, or, you know, like New Kids on the Block and Backstreet Boys going, hey, BTS, that's cute. Yeah, like they're like, oh, we get you. But there are also dangers to that approach, because the boy band in America, you have a limited shelf life. These K-pop acts can continue for many years past kind of what we would consider a sell-by date, but you slot yourself into that boy band slot. It's a hard road. Yeah. Yeah.
I would say also BTS in this time period, 2018, 2019, 2020, you're starting to understand there. Again, there's these more tentative outreaches in both directions. I think that the way that they play with hip hop is important. Obviously, they're not alone in that, but the way they play at hip hop is important, and I think gets them a little bit of maybe extra attention in America. But to me, like if there's a breaking point, to me, the breaking point is Butter. And let's listen to a little bit of Butter. I listen to this and I think, where did BTS go? Like, where did they go? Who has them? Where are they trapped? Who's doing this? Why are we doing this? It felt incredibly craven. It's a business decision masquerading as a pop hit. And it is, in fact, a number one pop hit. And this is the beginning of three number one U.S. Billboard Hot 100 number ones for BTS. It's Butter, Permission to Dance, and My Universe with Coldplay. I mean, I'll take Steve Aoki and Designer over Coldplay, for what it's worth. What happened in this moment? We're in 2021 at this point. BTS is undeniable in terms of scale. Why at that moment is this the aesthetic direction that this group went?
I would say they were undeniable in terms of being able to drive metrics. The thing with BTS that I think you have to understand is, unlike some of these other groups that we've talked about, they were coming from a company called, first it was Big Hit, but then it became HYBE. And HYBE was really looking to grow, and it was looking to grow very fast. And so a lot of these decisions stem from, in my opinion, a desire to raise a lot of money, like all at once.
So basically, to have the group have the big hit in to raise the valuation of the company, to raise money to grow the company.
Correct. Because
we do that with podcasts all the time.
The thing, like, HYBE had tried, they have another boy band, Tomorrow by Together, TXT, that they had tried to soft launch as BTS's little brothers in 2018 or 2019, I think it's 2019, but it didn't really take off. And something with these K-pop companies that really does keep them growing and keep fans engaged is that the fans, as older groups slow down, especially with the boy groups, they have to go into the military, but even the girl groups, they'll go do acting or go do fashion or other things. And fans move on, they adopt a younger group. And this did not happen with Tomorrow by Together. The BTS fans who had come in, they just stayed BTS fans.
Is that and that's pretty uncommon?
That's very uncommon. Okay. Yeah. I mean, it has changed a bit now, where you do see, ironically, that some of these BTS fans have moved on to HYBE's girl groups rather than the boy groups.
Damn.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Sorry, TXT. Yeah. I'm feeling bad.
Basically, they were a one-trick pony, and they had to ride that pony until that pony could not go any further. And so I think really what you see there is a reaction to a lot of different factors, including the pandemic, including they had this massive 2020 world tour scheduled that they had to cancel. And they didn't have necessarily the resources to refund all that ticket money right away.
Oh.
And they also had development of all these tech things. HYBE has a massive presence in tech. They have a fan platform that they're really trying to get even American acts on. They have their fingers in a bunch of different pies. But yeah, at this point, my impression anyway was, with these songs, they needed the cash. And this was one way to do it.
Okay. So plenty of great art over the years across disciplines has been made as the result of financial pressure. I am not of the camp that says that financial or logistical or considerations can't create the circumstance for great art. However, that is not what I believe is happening here. So as an offspring of the thing that you're describing, there is also this sense to me in these songs, this suite of songs, no one is in this marketplace right now in the American side. This is free and clear territory. And we've already built up, like, whether it's by us or by the groups and the labels and the conglomerates that preceded us, we've built up a substantive fan base and marketplace, and people are willing to hear K-pop, and K-pop is regularly charting. So why not just make essentially neutral, generic pop, English language pop, by the most famous band in the world? And then, boy, it will end up at the top of the charts, and which is exactly what happened. Now, that's how it feels to me. But again, doesn't that on some level damage the thing that BTS has been good at up until that point?
I mean, I would think so. I was in a small group of fans who we had liked BTS previous to a lot of this. And
yeah. Safe space. And, is it me too? It's fine. Like, and don't tweet us. We're grown ups.
We had just drifted away because this was not anything I wanted to listen to. It didn't sound like the group that I had enjoyed. Even with BTS being that chameleon group, they were able to handle a bunch of different styles and, you know, do them well. But yeah, this one was just, it was a step too far for me anyway.
I think if you were to take the devil's advocate position, Butter proves a point, which is that the biggest, most popular English language, in quote marks, music act, boy band, pop act, need not derive from America or from Europe. That group can come from anywhere. I think that's a valuable contribution to like how pop's globalization is understood. That said, it seems like a genuine aesthetic setback for this group in particular. And then if we're going to move into the solo projects a little bit, and obviously an RM solo project is not going to be the same as a V or what Jungkook has done, but I think the Jungkook album is really instructive. I kind of waffled on this album a bit when I first listened to it. I was like, it's so glossy. It's so like just like sealed up tight. No edges on it at all. And then after a couple of listens, I was like, maybe that's the point. Maybe that's okay. And I sort of like warmed to it as a shiny artifact. But here's an album. This is it heavily or fully in it? I'm trying to remember language wise.
I believe it's all in English.
Like, I don't think there's any Korean.
No, I don't think there is.
And what does that tell you, that for Jungkook at this stage of his career, that is the direction that folks chose to go in? And collaborations with Latto, Jack Harlow, and you mentioned in the email we were exchanging the other day, this Justin Timberlake thing.
To me, it sounds like listening to Top 40 radio, like to an iHeart radio station, and getting a nice sample of everything that's in the charts right now. It just sounds like Top 40 iHeartRadio. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Do you think it's good?
I don't think it's bad.
Yeah, okay.
I don't think it's bad.
I can accept that.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with it. It's a very serviceable mainstream pop album.
Yeah. Again, I warm to it as that.
Yeah, there's some good songs on there.
But is it wrong in this moment then to ask the broader question of, is K-pop, is it being stripped on some level of the singular things that made it so fascinating? And look, you could have someone respond to that and say, yeah, but that's happened with all genres, and all genres that go broad and mainstream as they lose some of their specificity in service of reaching more people. And that's a fine counterargument. But to me, I think I would have been way more excited to hear whoever the next Justin Bieber is trying to make records that sound like K-pop records than hearing Jungkook trying to make records that sound like washed up Justin Timberlake records.
Yeah, that Justin Timberlake remix is something else.
Yeah, that's not it. Let's listen. You know what? Let's play a little bit of it just for our special friend.
For what you asked for. Jung and JT on the main now. You can still find me in a drop top with the top down, but I got so many lanes now. And when I put it in a six and it clicks, all the tricks got you going the same now. I reach through the screen, feel my touch top up while I'm watching you rain down. Come on.
This year, a very important public figure turns 80. He sent us his wish for his birthday.
My wish is for everyone to practice wildfire safety, because only you can prevent wildfires.
That sounds easy enough. Bet you don't know who it is. Nah, of course you do. It's Smokey Bear. Let's all make sure Smokey's wish comes true by learning his wildfire prevention tips at SmokeyBear.com. Because Smokey Bear lives within us all. Brought to you by the USDA Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
What's being lost here?
What it is, it's an attempt to make American music, but just by a Korean. There really is no K-pop in this album other than the fact that the audience listening to it is a K-pop audience. That's what makes it K-pop.
If this same exact album had been made by a different artist, I think it just goes by.
If it was by...
Jimmy Wilson or whatever, like just a random American guy.
Yeah. One of the Jonas Brothers put out a solo album called Jolden or something, right?
Don't give him any ideas.
And yeah, then it's, yeah, this exact same album. It'll go in one ear and out the other. The only thing that makes it notable is whose face is representing this. But yeah, I do agree that something is lost there, because there is a sound to K-pop. I think fans like to say, it's not a genre, it's not a genre. And that's true. It's not a genre. But it's
not exclusively. No.
I mean, there are many different kinds of songs, but I think that previously there was always this real eclectic drive to just pick up pieces from here and there and everywhere, use new sounds, use new and bigger and brighter colors and costuming, and just get the weirdest stuff that you can find and throw it on screen. And there are still acts doing that. I heard a song the other day that it sounded like a country, like country music style, like guitars, like all through it. And yeah, it was great.
Come on. Dale, click pop. Sing about good, good, good. Scream and shout. The country get groove, groove, groove. 해를 지고 달려가 넓은 바다로.
You know, you have guys like Taemin, who's 30 now and like still holding down the fort for the art pop. But yeah, that's not necessarily the stuff that gets exported to us like here in America. And in a way, it's frustrating, just because now when people think K-pop, they do think butter.
Okay. But again, here's the devil's advocate read, which is it's inherently meaningful that the most pop, American pop album of this year was made by someone from South Korea, from a K-pop boy band. Like, that to me is, that's where I'm pulled in both directions. Because on some level, I think that's inherently valuable or interesting or thought-provoking. And I think would encourage non-K-pop listeners to think hard about the pop music that they consume and say, huh, that's fascinating. I'm getting this very similar product that also sounds pretty much like the other things I like, but it's coming down a different pathway.
It's not, though. That's the thing, is all the writers, all the producers, it's an American album with a Korean face on it, basically. And so I think that if I was a listener that was like, oh, this is what a K-pop guy can do, it sounds just like Justin Timberlake. Why do you need a Korean guy doing Justin Timberlake when we have Justin Timberlake? I can go see Trolls 3 right now. Well,
oh.
You know, I don't need to fly to Seoul to go see Trolls 3, right? It's a year.
Damn. Come for the philosophical K-pop discussion, stay for the troll slander.
I have little nieces, probably will go see Trolls with them. So no hate on Trolls.
Let me ask this question. We're having this conversation, just two Americans that care a lot about this particular kind of music. And are we trying to protect something that in Korea, amongst the core fan base, those fans are like, This is fine. I have no problem with this.
From what I understand, I don't think we're off base, because even going back, we were talking about Big Bang, but even when Alive came out, which is such a great album, but there were complaints even back then from fans that it was too global. It didn't sound Korean enough. And so there are always going to be those people that don't like change, that don't like a global sound. But I think in this case, I have heard a lot of complaints from fellow fans not in America, fellow fans in Asia, that this just isn't, it just isn't what we're looking for. And ironically, I think you do find that what's popular in Korea right now, if you look at like the, I mean, charts can be deceiving, but it's stuff like Akmu. It's stuff like Akmu. Lovely is like one of the popular songs right now, which is a very sweet little ditty. You would never hear it here. You know, it just wouldn't play here at all. But that's what people are listening to. And like the big girl group, I think, is IVE, who have no profile here at all.
Tell me a song by them that you think we should hear.
Yeah, maybe I Am.
So we're going to play that. And then I have questions about NewJeans. Is NewJeans a psyop designed to appeal to like forward thinking American music fan? Like, is that, because it's working on me, certainly. I don't know how you feel about them.
Yeah, I like NewJeans.
But, you know, I feel like that's a group who obviously is moving between Korean and English, but also moving between K-pop maximalism. And like, if there was a truly forward thinking American pop group right now, that's what it would sound like, I think. In terms of the reference points, what it's borrowing from. Tell me about how I versus NewJeans, what are they doing differently?
I think a lot of it comes down to just the performances are very different. The groups themselves are just formed very different. NewJeans, they're very young. They're very young. They're teenagers. And they have this very, it's a quality that you don't see a lot in K-pop, at least not really anymore, but it's this real ingenue. They're not quite perfect yet. And yeah, they have, their music is also, it does have a more Western sound to it. The reference point that I hear a lot is Pink Panthers. It does have a more Western appeal to it. Their performance style is just, they wear like the little high school uniforms. It does have a very, I don't know, a nostalgic appeal almost. For those of us who grew up in the Britney Spears era, I think what were they, the Billboard Music Awards performance? It strongly echoed Britney and her little schoolgirl chic. Whereas I think their songs just sound more Korean or more Korean pop. They don't necessarily have, they're a little more harder edged, and the girls are a little more like adult. They're not really adult, but it's just got a very different vibe to it.
And in Korea, IVE's more popular than NewJeans.
I would say so, yes.
Whereas, like you say, here, no profile, really no profile or minimal profile. Certainly not compared to the tastemaker, you know, the sort of like NewJeans, Le Sserafim access.
And a lot of that, too, is the agency, because both Le Sserafim and NewJeans are under HYBE, who they have the partnership with Scooter Braun, and they have those kind of industry connections.
But also I do think like the music and the aesthetics,
like
watching those first NewJeans videos, I was like, oh yeah, like these videos could be made by like the 10 coolest like hip hop stylists and creative directors and art direct like that I follow on Instagram, you know. And probably, hell, maybe they were, you know, like for all I know. Okay, so we're gonna go out with a sort of lesser known NewJeans song. Let's go out with Cool With You, which is on the second EP, which I think my albums list will be out by the time this episode comes out. And it's on my albums list. You'll see where if you look. That's our show. Kara, thank you so much for coming through and talking through some of these struggle points with us without fear, I should say, because we're grown-ups and we can have our own opinions. But I appreciate it because it does seem that like discourse and on your blog, other newsletters about like K-pop without the K, it's interesting philosophically to think about what does that mean? Is that a geographic thing, a stylistic thing, a language thing? It's interesting to have been observing that industry for the last 10 plus years and see it be going through this kind of like tug of war about like, how do we grow? How do we get to be bigger? And maybe even should we? That seems to be what's at play. More on that to come undoubtedly in the coming years. And I guess if you do want to hear a very shiny pop album of pop music made by a person who knows pop music, there, go listen to Golden by Jungkook. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Email us at podcast@nytimes.com. If you have any questions, subscribe to a podcast anywhere you get your audio content. That is Spotify, Apple Music, youtube.com/podcast. That's me and Joe every week in video form. If you're into that kind of thing, subscribe there, youtube.com/podcast. tinyurl.com/podcast Facebook or podcast Discord. That's for the Facebook group and the Discord. Jump in there, ask questions. We'll do our best to answer them. Our producer, as always, is Pedro Rosado from Headstepper Media. We will be back next week. This is Cool With You. You know.